With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This week's episode of Screen Talk is brought to you by Amazon Studios' Wonder Wheel, the new movie starring Kate Winslet, Jim Belushi, Juno Temple, and Justin Timberlake. By acclaimed writer and director Woody Allen, Wonder Wheel tells the story of four characters whose lives intertwine amid the hustle and bustle of the Coney Island amusement park in the 1950s. The film follows a lifeguard, played by Justin Timberlake, who tells the story of a Coney Island carousel operator and his beleaguered wife, played by Kate Winslet in an awards-worthy performance. Get tickets to see Wonder Wheel in select theaters on December 1st, everywhere December 15th. Welcome to Screen Talk, IndieWire's weekly podcast. I'm Eric Cohn, the deputy editor and chief critic, joined as always by editor-at-large Ann Thompson out in Los Angeles. And we are getting deeper and deeper into award season. There are so many different kinds of things to talk about, even as many more things are to come. So many different awards right around the corner and shortlists and so forth. But let's start with a couple of things that have been in the headlines recently, one of which we helped kind of fuel this week related to the Golden Globes and Get Out being deemed a comedy by the HFPA. And I thought this was really interesting because, one, yeah, it is kind of a comedy in certain ways, but two, it's not a comedy in the most traditional sense. And we had Jordan Peele basically saying he didn't see it as a comedy. So what was really interesting here is you see this kind of fundamental disconnect on some level between the way that filmmakers think of their work and the way that studios kind of have to, like, plug it into this machine. I mean,
well, there are a couple of different things going on there. One is that Jordan Peele probably doesn't really understand how it works. He told you that he thought you could just submit it and they would decide what category it was. Well, in fact, Universal submitted it as a comedy and had solicited his input on this. So he was dissembling with you a little bit. But I think what was really going on is that he saw this movie that he takes very seriously, and he saw the Twitter chatter about it where people were saying, this isn't a comedy, this is a very serious film about racism. And of course it is. But I think it's the same thing as The Martian. I think Fox submitted it in that case as a comedy and didn't think it, because they had a better shot at getting right. Daniel Kaluuya a nomination as a comedy. All the different categories where it would be hard to get in as a drama, yeah, have a better shot of winning as a comedy.
Yeah, exactly. It should be the front runner in that category, assuming it's nominated and all that. If it had been in the drama section, it would have generated some interesting conversations, too. I mean, at the end of the day...
Well, it gives it more gravitas if it's in the drama category, and I think that that's a good thing when you're aiming at the Oscars. So I think what the Universal people were doing, were looking at it as a two-step, one step at a time leading toward the Oscars. They want to win something. They want to make sure they get in. They're not thinking about, oh, we need to add gravitas to it so that it'll be taken seriously by Oscar
right.
winners.
Right, and I think in some ways it's like
Oscar voters.
This is sort of a microcosm of what the story of Get Out all year has been, which is that it kind of has it both ways, in the sense that, you know, the anticipation of this movie was that it would be a comedy. It has been received on some level as a funny satire of our very troubled times, but it's also a social thriller that is very real to certain people in terms of how it's tapping into the kind of fear of being a person of color in this country, or the discomfort of dealing with other people and so forth in that context. And so I think what's interesting about it is, look, it is probably going to be the front runner in that category, but I don't think it's, I mean, you can tell me if I'm wrong, I don't think it's hurting the chances of it winning in that category for the filmmaker to come out and say, well, it's not really a comedy, it's this other thing, which people love to read about and talk about. I mean, to engage with the question of whether or not this movie actually belongs in a box, because what's key to its success is that it transcends all those things. It's very entertaining, but it's also got real ideas.
No, I agree with all of that. The I think the most important thing that's going to happen for Get Out is that you guys, the critics, are going to come through for it at year's end, and that's going to give it the necessary credibility and gravitas that it needs, because it's trying to overcome its genre roots. Even though it way outstripped the limitations of any genre, it still confuses people. Is it a horror movie? Is it a comedy? Is it a satire? Is it a Hitchcockian thriller? We think that's an asset. Critics think that's an asset, but it needs to be codified for people. And when people start winning awards, like the Broadcast Film Critics or the New York Film Critics or the Golden Globes, that's when, you know, that'll be a good thing heading toward Oscars. Of course, the Indie Spirits are going to go in the direction of Get Out, and I think there are a lot of other films that will get the benefit of the Indie. That's going to be coming out next week, the nominations. So we're going to see Good Times Rob Pattinson and people like that getting some attention.
And then the Gothams will happen a week after that. So within the next 2 weeks, we'll have a whole bunch of those kinds of things to look at. But Get Out, like you're saying, is basically the one that stands to benefit the most from that in terms of the long game.
Yes, exactly. And then the other story that was interesting this week was that Errol Morris's Wormwood is going to be coming out on Netflix. It premiered at Telluride. It played at a couple of other fests, including AFI Fest recently. And he was here. And he is a filmmaker. He's someone, you know, he won for Fog of War. He started out back in the day with Gates of Heaven and of course, the famous Thin Blue Line, which got a man off of death row. You know, he did Philip Glass scores, he did reenactments, he was very ahead of his time, and all of the other documentary filmmakers have eventually caught up with him, but now he does this 4-hour, you know, fiction slash documentary hybrid, incredibly ornate and elaborate investigation into a CIA agent who falls to his death.
Or killed himself.
And played by Peter Sarsgaard in the fiction form of the film. And of course, the Academy has decided in its wisdom that this is not a movie and it's not a documentary and it's not eligible for the Oscars.
Well, you know what's interesting about, I mean, this is more of an intellectual point than I think it is, you know, a kind of great tragedy or a disservice being done, because, you know, I found Wormwood, the version that I saw at Telluride anyway, to be fascinating as an experiment, and certainly shows a filmmaker pushing beyond his most familiar instincts. He drops the Interatron. He's doing something that's not quite flashbacks, because it's sort of like an imaginary version of what might have happened in the hotel for this
exactly.
year. So it's interesting to see him flex those muscles. It's a difficult experimental approach that almost certainly would not have been an Oscar frontrunner, I think. So I think that has to be acknowledged. And then the other point...
Well, mainly because the documentary branch of the Oscars isn't willing to go that far away from what they consider to be legitimate documentary procedure.
But don't forget that, you know, Act of Killing got an Oscar nomination. I mean, strange, unorthodox stuff can get through. I just think this one, you combine the length with the approach, it doesn't work for everybody. It's a fascinating experience.
I loved it. I think it's brilliant. I think it's his best thing. I mean, and as you pointed out in some piece or other that you wrote, you know, he did abandon, you know, his recent tropes and tried some new things.
Yeah, no, that's what I think is most fascinating about it. But I also feel like it is for diehard Errol Morris people more than anything else. On some level, it's really interesting to see him evolve in that sense. But I know for a fact that it doesn't totally work for everybody. But I think what's cool about it is
you can see it on Netflix.
Yeah, I mean it's sort of an interesting kind of a long form experience because it is so hard to categorize. But you know, ironically, in spite of all this stuff, part of what's going on here are the after effects of O.J. Made in America winning Best Documentary.
Yes, but Long Strange Trip did qualify, you see. They did it the way you're supposed to do it. They had a theatrical version shown all in one go at Sundance. Then they had the theatrical version. Then they showed it on on streaming. So they took their time to space it out. This was like the same. It's really the same movie with the interstitials taken out. That's the problem. He didn't like John Ridley did a short version of Let It Fall, and then he did a much longer theatrical version. So it appears to be that you have to really play. And he said, "I'm not even making this eligible for the Emmys, John Ridley." And part of it is that Errol Morris wants to be considered by film critics and more who know him more than TV. He wants to be back in his world, and now he's in this sort of brave new Netflix world, and I don't know that he's comfortable there. I mean, he likes the fact that they gave him a lot of money to make this series.
Yeah, he tapped the narrative resources that they have.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the other thing that's interesting is the Academy is evaluating all of these definitions and trying. They have a committee and they're trying to deal with these questions of what's digital and what's documentary and what's series and what's television, and they're trying to figure that out.
I just think, if nothing else, it shows that there is a template for tapping into those two departments and to create something unique
right.
that could, you know, get more people into it. In
yep.
that sense.
Yep. No, I think it's a great. I think it's a great trend. And then, what else have we got coming up?
Well, one thing that just to completely do with a change of direction here, you know, we've got Justice League opening this week, and I don't want to waste too much time talking about the movie because it was pretty forgettable. But one thing I've noticed is that it has gotten Gal Gadot back in front of the cameras, doing press and publicity. You know, talking about
and she's the best thing in the movie yet again.
She is definitely the best thing in this totally boring movie. But I think it's notable. I mean, I got an Art of Wonder Woman book in the mail that weighed a lot. I couldn't figure out what this giant package was at my front desk. And I feel like the campaign for that movie, at least to keep it visible and in conversation, is pretty interesting in the sense that even the Justice League stuff is probably helping her on some level, because everybody loves Wonder Woman. Even if they don't, even if they haven't seen the movie, they're aware of Wonder Woman.
I'm looking at all this, you know, I'm here in LA, you're in New York, and we're both sort of witnessing the various campaigns as they play out. And today I was very gratified to see that Mudbound got a great review in the New York Times from A.O. Scott, the kind of review you want if you want to be taken seriously as a movie that people may have a chance to see in theaters for a week or two before it's back only on Netflix. And you know, obviously Lady Bird is playing out very well. Three Billboards is playing out very well. Darkest Hour so far very well here in L.A. So these things are, you know, Shape of Water is starting to make its impact here in L.A. So these things are all moving forward the way they're supposed to do. And there's long lists of documentaries that we have to wade through and long lists of foreign films. It's all very daunting, we're getting there. Wonder Woman, I'm not so sure, honestly. I'm not feeling it.
Well, it's just notable that we're still being reminded of this. I mean, there is a definitely a strong impulse to keep remember of all the blockbusters this year, not counting Get Out, which is kind of its own thing, this unexpected blockbuster. Only Wonder Woman seems to have, unless you count something like Dunkirk. But Dunkirk is another one. You didn't mention it.
No, Dunkirk is fine. They're doing all the right. They did the right things at the festivals. They're doing more things. They did some more things at AFI. They're re-releasing it. They're not going to miss any opportunity to make Dunkirk a front runner. I mean, what I did, you know, I do think there's a question of whether Dunkirk stays at the front of the pack when we get to see Phantom Thread and The Post. Those are the first two coming up, and The Last Jedi, which I have to say I'm really excited about. Of all the movies coming up, that's the one I'm the most, because I love Rian Johnson. I've always been a fan. He seems to get the Star Wars universe. They think so. They've given him three more to do when they've been firing everybody else.
It really does make you wonder just how well did this thing come together. Or is it just, you know, they didn't have any drama, so they get along well, so they want to, you got
to
stick
well, we have to wait. You know, so they're doing a big premiere on December the 9th.
So this is actually related to a bigger context, which is in the past week, there were basically the three movies that you mentioned were the ones.
Yes, we've got screenings now.
We finally know that, like, these are real
movies. Thank you. We're going to see them.
Part of the year, and it's like, we start heading into the fall, and you start to get a better idea of what's going to be super down to the wire. So it was The Post, and it was Paul Thomas Anderson's Phantom Thread, and it was The Last Jedi. The Star Wars movies are always, they go last. They don't care about the critics' deadlines and all that kind of stuff. The Post was just down to the wire, I think, because they just shot it over the summer, basically. And then Phantom Thread is because PTA likes to tweak stuff up until the last minute.
So it's the Thanksgiving weekend, which is usually the last possible chance to reach the critics groups and the Globes and get all those people in. You know, that's the real deadline that they're trying to make. So they've got various screenings with Q&As, and there's, you know, Spielberg and Meryl and Tom and so forth, and in LA and in New York, and then they've got PTA, and he's doing some Q&As as well.
Yeah, so it's going to be, it's like a 1-2-3 punch, or a 1-2 and then a pause and then the third, because The Post is going to show, we're going to start seeing that over the weekend, and then the PTA film, and then Star Wars will come later. But what's interesting is, so what I've heard about The Post that I think is notable for award season conversations is that it's a lot better than that trailer. You look at that trailer.
Yeah, I spoke to someone today who saw it, and they said that I was going to really like it, that it may not be totally Academy friendly, but it's better and more accessible than the last two PTAs.
I mean, look, well, and I'm talking about Spielberg, though.
You're talking about The Post?
Yeah, The Post. Because I think it's notable that The Post, if you look at the trailer and you see what the movie's about, you kind of start to get the sense that
it looks old-fashioned.
You've seen it already. Yeah, yeah, it's sort of like you've been there, you know exactly what you're in for. And I'm sure it is that. But then there's little things, you know, Bob Odenkirk being in there and the kind of the drama of the story opening up some possibilities. It's both that film and the PTA film are just a straight 2 hours. It sounds like they're very contained. Basically, both of these movies, you know, The Post sounds like it's going to hit a lot of buttons for people. Phantom Thread sounds like a lot of PTA. So it may not work for everybody, but some people are really going to get into it. And so that's exciting, and the last kind of tidbits of the year aren't going to, you know, be sort of also rans or anything to that effect. Of course, we won't see all the money in the world until who knows when.
Well, they're going to try to get it done by opening day at any rate. But they're certainly not going to be screening it for critics in any kind of timely fashion. Oh, the other thing that was interesting is all the news that's breaking surrounding Quentin Tarantino's new movie, which apparently I ran into him at this Beguiled party after a screening with Sofia Coppola, who they used to date back in the day, and they're still good friends. And so he was coming through for her, and I asked him what was going on with the Manson movie. He said, "It's not Manson. It's 1969."
Yeah, that was your money quote right there. Which is interesting, because I feel like he doesn't want to. He never makes movies that are strictly about like one historical figure or something like that. I mean, it's,
well, what we don't know. I mean, he wants $100 million for it, and there are a couple of what he was telling me was that he had gone out to do this big dog and pony show thing. Basically, the five different studios, not Disney, because they're not into R-rated films, did a big pitch. They put up big marketing, and here's what we're going to do for you. They're all trying to get Tarantino.
Yeah,
and
which is awesome.
And
in a way,
I feel for him. I mean, well, what's so interesting about this is that he was protected and sort of sequestered. He chose to stay with they were chasing him all along, but he chose to stay with Harvey Weinstein and with this sort of being the star guy at this one boutique independent company and the one who got the biggest budgets. And he was able to make art films that were on a big budget and get away with it for a really long time. And this movie, I'm really curious, you know, apparently a few of the studios are zeroing in on him, but apparently, you know, I'm curious to see if he gets his budget.
Know what they say, you shouldn't stay in one job for too long.
Right.
Tarantino is sort of the counterpoint to that, in the sense that, you know, when he could have, when he broke out in the early 90s, been one of those people who went the studio route, you know, Linklater went and did Dazed and Confused or whatever. Like that, by staying with Harvey, I feel like he actually was able to maintain a certain autonomy and develop his identity on his own timeline
and on his own terms, and also basically was able to say, "I am an artist who wants to make films for a certain legacy that will be remembered by history, that are not dictated by studio commercial constraints." And so, part of what I'm saying here is that he's entering the real world. He's entering a marketplace now.
Theoretically, he's coming to them on his own terms.
Right? In theory. But there's no such thing. If they give you money, I mean, that's the question, is what is the deal? You know, I've got Final Cut, it's this budget, it's this kind of distribution plan, but already he's talking about putting Tom Cruise in it or Leonardo,
right.
Or, you know,
yeah,
it's all going to be expensive, and it's all going to be, you know, he doesn't make commercial movies in the studio context. He really doesn't.
But his movies can be commercial. Django.
When they are, they're amazing. I couldn't believe that Django Unchained did as well.
$1 billion worldwide.
I could not believe it.
I mean, but I think what's interesting is some studios do allow for Final Cut. This is not, it's not unthinkable. It's just a question. We haven't read the script. People say the script has a lot of heart to it.
The 1969 thing. That's the question. You see. Manson's more commercial in a weird way than 1969 is.
Think about it that way. On the other hand, if it's a hyper stylized kind of generational, you know, statement or something through his own kind of lens of historical fantasy with all these big names, it could just end up being the movie of the year. I mean, that's probably what...
You and I are in. That's not the issue.
Oh, no. Duh. But, we want to make the movie. But I mean, I'd also have no problem with the studio taking a total hit on this if they let him do his thing.
No, we
and
don't have
finally,
a problem.
You know,
like, if Paramount is the one that's the neediest and ends up stepping up for it, you know, they that's the thing. It's going to be the studio that has the most need, that is willing to bank on the biggest budget.
Yeah, exactly. And then also, like you were saying, kind of roll with Tarantino being this guy who's really committed to his vision in his very specific kind of way. The question is he going to demand that it tour the country in 70 millimeter or something crazy like he did with the last one? And is it going to be over 3 hours long? Because
this is exactly what I'm saying. I mean, these are the questions that we don't know the answer to. And he was saying it's a level playing field. We're just going to figure this out. You know, I mean, that's the thing. Each one of those negotiations is going to have a different set of parameters that he has to go through and figure out. I'm fascinated by how this turns out, partly because it's also revealing of the studios themselves. If you look at Sony, it's kind of in a bad place. If you look at Paramount, not strong. They have a lot of recovery to do. And then you have, you know, Universal's relatively strong. Fox is relatively strong. And yet they're talking about going over to Disney or something, you know, that the Murdochs are willing to get rid of it. And so everybody's got a I don't know how to explain it. The town is sort of in a state of flux with a big cloud over it. It's not a happy, we're successful feel right now.
No, and it's. I mean, sometimes great artists tend to benefit from an industry that is struggling to figure out what to do next. So this could be exactly the opportunity, not only for Tarantino, but maybe some other people to kind of bring something that seems really exciting that could have commercial appeal, but is also driven by a specific creative intent to get out there. I mean, it can't just be like Star Wars or bust, right? You know, there's so many different kinds of filmmakers out there who could theoretically do something that would excite people. It's just a question of, are the studios willing to meet their terms to make that happen? Because good stuff usually does survive.
Yeah, but I mean, I'd like to think that's true. But I went to see Murder on the Orient Express at the AMC.
I don't know if I would compare that.
In a commercial movie theater at 10 o'clock at night on a weeknight, and there were hardly anybody there. And you just get this sense of this enormous theater, this enormous multiplex, this enormous shopping mall, and this sense of 25 minutes of ads and and trailers and stuff that I would never see at the Arclight. And I was just looking at my watch. I was like, it's late. I want this movie to start. And I have to get home really late. And if I had my druthers, I could look at this movie on a screener in my house, you know?
Yeah, it's incredibly unattractive to people to go see movies in theaters unless they really feel like they're events. Murder on the Orient Express is a great example of a movie that nobody really seemed all that excited to go check out.
It's perfectly pleasant and it's perfectly ephemeral, you know? It's enjoyable while you're watching it, but there's no reason for it to exist.
That's the problem with the commercial industry overall, which is, you know, most of the movies that we see go through that machine, no matter who's involved, even if it's a, you know, sometimes talented filmmaker like Kenneth Branagh, they're just sort of shrugged.
He is a talented filmmaker, and he had fun with this. But it remains a forgettable thing, you know? Yeah, it just
is. The worst fate. In some ways, that's worse than making, you know, a really notable bad. I'd rather see a like, insanely bad misfire.
Like Mother. No. I love Mother. I do.
Mother is an experience. That's a thing people should be excited about. That's an interesting counterpoint, because people didn't go to that, but they loved talking about it.
Mother
or hearing
is great.
About it.
I hope people catch up with Mother online when it's available, because it's an absolute hoot. It is just a fabulous movie.
I love that people call it a comedy. It's so funny. it's almost like more of a comedy to call it a comedy, but it's something. It's something about it. So next week we will have Spirit nominations to dig through, and that'll be an interesting contrast to everything we're talking about, because for a small window of time, we'll have a much bigger crop of movies to kind of dig through, and then obviously it'll get more and more narrower from there with the, we've got our New York Film Critics Circle announcements, the Gotham Awards, Thanksgiving break, and then all the rest of that good stuff. So enjoy your weekend, and I'll
you
talk
too.
To you soon.
Bye-bye.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.